This is the last day of this July 2008 7-day session, and we'll take up another koan today. This is from the Blue Cliff record, the Hekigan Roku, and it's number 21, and it's called Chimon and the Lotus. Or let's use his Chinese name, his original name, Jimen. Often there's a similarity, similar sound from the original Chinese to the Japanese version, as in this case, Jimen Chimon. A monk asked Jimen, "How is it when the lotus flower has not yet emerged from the water?" Jimen said, "A lotus flower." Then the monk asked again, "What about after it has emerged from the water?" Jimen answered, "Lotus leaves." This Jimen Guangzhou, the only information we have that he, as far as his dates, was that he died in the year 1031, which placed him in the Sung Dynasty, which is the one that succeeded the Tang Dynasty. The names I'm reading here from Andy Ferguson's Zen's Chinese Heritage. It mentions a lot of names here, where he's born, who was his teacher, and where he went, and I don't recognize any of these names, so I'm just going to skip them. Looks like he lived near where the earthquake was a couple months ago in China, outside of Chengdu. He got his name from the temple that he took over, which is Jimen Temple. Very common for these Zen masters to take the name, to be known then also by the name of the temple that they taught at, or the mountain. A monk asked Zen master Jimen, "What is Buddha?" Jimen said, "When the straw sandals are worn out, continue barefoot." The monk asked, "What is the affair that is beyond Buddha?" Jimen said, "The tip of the staff upholds the sun and moon." You know, I know from my own experience that a lot of these dialogues that I read in Taisho are incomprehensible. But I read them because I suspect that at some level of the mind, the listener, with some of them at least, is getting something about the tone, the words, the spirit of it, the flavor of the exchange, the dialogue, is being appreciated at some level of the mind. Some are more accessible, more understandable than others. This first one, what is the first question, what is Buddha? When the straw sandals are worn out, continue barefoot. Get a sense of that. Nothing about, and no deity, no supernatural being, omnipotent, omniscient, omnipresent. Remember the word Buddha, just in its simplicity like that, Buddha, just the word Buddha means enlightenment. The monk is asking, what's enlightenment? What's our enlightened nature? When the straw sandals are worn out, continue barefoot. In there we have elements of, well, of impermanence, one of the primary laws of Buddhism. Impermanence, things in their suchness, nothing special. And losing. I said earlier in Sesshin, Zen is a practice of daily losing. Another time a monk asked, what is the meaning of Bodhidharmas coming from the West? Or what is the highest truth, ultimate reality? Zhimen said, the eyes can't see the nose. The person then asked, what is it when one understands in this manner? Zhimen said, smelling your nose. A monk asked, what is the pure Dharmakaya? Same question. What is Buddha nature, basically? Zhimen said, the entire eye is dust. A monk asked, what is it before the ancient mirror is polished? Zhimen said, it's just a piece of copper. The monk then asked, what about after it is polished? Zhimen said, then you can take it. This one is not completely dissimilar from our koan today. A monk asked, what is perceived by the pupil of the diamond eye? Zhimen said, a handful of sand. The monk then asked, why is it like that? Zhimen said, it's not a noble realm. It's not a noble realm. It's plain. I'm reminded of a phrase from another koan in the Blue Cliff Record, no holy one in the Emerald Palace. In fact, no one at all. Here's a here's a just a little talk by Zhimen relating to the custom at the time in China of monks going on pilgrimages for periods regularly for certain periods of the year, and we can gather from many different sources that the masters weren't always pleased the way that the monks use these pilgrimages. That is, it seems that many of the monks just went around just for the sake of traveling, looking here, looking there, meeting new people, seeing new places. In other words, looking outside themselves. And we've read from this seat of various masters who would decry the misuse of pilgrimages, to have it more, using them more as tourist periods. Well, here, let's listen to Zhimen here. He entered the hall and addressed the monks, saying, "All of you put your staffs over your shoulder and go traveling, leaving one monastery and traveling to the next. How many different types of monasteries do you say there are? It's either a sandalwood monastery surrounded by sandalwood, or it's a thistle monastery surrounded by thistles. Or it could be a thistle monastery surrounded by sandalwood, or a sandalwood monastery surrounded by thistles. Of these four types of monasteries, in which type is each of you willing to spend your life? If you don't find a place to pass your life securely, then you're just wearing out your sandals for no reason, and eventually the day will come when the king of hell will take away all of your sandal money." It's heartbreaking to a Zen teacher to see students who, anyone, but especially students who have found the path, to be looking anywhere other than their own mind for peace, happiness, understanding. Well, that's all we have for our Mr. Zhimen. And now we'll go back to the koan. I'm going to turn to Sekita's book, Two Zen Classics, and include in my commentary, include the introduction by the commentator. In Doksan, we don't usually work on the introduction or other verses with the koan. We just work on the case. But this is a kind of a neat one, so I'm just going to include it. He said, "Setting up the Dharma banner and establishing the Dharma teaching, this is like spreading flowers over brocades. Strip off the blinders and set down the saddle pack. This is the season of great peace. If you master the transcendent words, you will be able to know three corners from one. If not, as usual, listen to the following." setting up the Dharma banner and establishing the Dharma teaching. This is like spreading flowers over brocades, adding frost to snow, as we hear in another koan. Hadada Roshi, in his final words, said, "For 40 years I've been selling water by the river." Bah! Spreading flowers over brocades. Strip off the blinders and set down the saddle pack. This is the season of great peace. What a relief to let go of this burden of an illusory self, all of its complexes and cravings, its attachments and if you master the transcendent words, you will be able to know three corners from one. You see three corners of a square, you know what the one is that's not shown. This Jimin, one other thing, he was the teacher of Secho, or Shui Do, whose verses are sprinkled through the Blue Cliff Record. So a monk asked Jimin, "How is it when the lotus flower has not yet emerged from the water?" This is not the question of a beginner. One of the mistakes that many people make with these koans is they kind of just assume that the questions are from innocent. They're innocent questions from monks who don't understand anything, who are just asking sincere, simple questions. But these very often were just these questions were just part of a Dharma duel, and they're asked by senior monks with real understanding. The lotus, as most of you surely know, the lotus is the Buddhist symbol of our true nature. It's like our true nature in that the lotus emerges, and this is the fact, that the lotus flowers emerge from muddy water, and then open and are unstained. The petals are utterly, perfectly clean and bright, glistening, even though they came up out of muddy water. After years of hearing in Taisho references to lotus and reading about this ancient Buddhist symbol, I finally saw a whole lot of them in Bali. I accompanied Roshi and a group of others to the largest Buddhist monument in the world. It's called Borobudur on the island of Java, actually. And then we skipped over It's just about a mile that separates Java from Bali. And we spent a few days on Bali, and we stopped on one of our little excursions on Bali. We stopped, our bus stopped, and at a like a kind of a restaurant tea house, and it had this giant lotus pond. It was rectangular, about maybe twice the size of an Olympic-sized swimming pool. It's about twice as long, twice as wide, and it had these hundreds and hundreds of tall lotuses, their stems just disappearing into the water. It was really, really beautiful. I don't think I need to, certainly don't want to explain what this question is. Isn't it obvious? How is it when the lotus flower has not yet emerged from the water? Zhimen said, a lotus flower. Doesn't matter that it hasn't emerged from the water. It's still this perfect, lustrous lotus flower. A master once said, no ordinary person ever became a Buddha. Only Buddhas become Buddhas. It is the fundamental experience of awakening to confirm for oneself, to see through one's own experience, that all beings, without exception, are equally endowed with this enlightened nature. But until we have awakened to this nature, we go on acting, living in an unenlightened way. Well, even after, there are these habit patterns that we were reading from in the text of Chinul, Korean Zen Master Chinul. But once having emerged from the water, then one knows that everyone is equally this lotus. Equally. It is crucial that anyone in a teaching position have seen into this. This is not commonly accepted. Many Zen teachers have not. But what a wonderful thing it is to conduct Doksan and see only lotus flowers coming in, one after another. Then the monk asked again, what about after it has emerged from the water? And Zhimen answered, lotus leaves. There is another translation, instead of leaves, petals. I was told by Robert Goldman Sensei that in German, the word for petal is Blütenblätter, which means blossom leaves. But in terms of the koan, it's not, this linguistic point is not important. Lotus leaves, let's make it. In long, long ago, Japanese Zen divided itself into these two main schools, the Soto and the Rinzai. The Soto school would place more emphasis on Jimen's first answer, a lotus flower. In the Rinzai school, they would insist on the distinction between the lotus flower and the lotus leaves. That is, until we have actualized this self-nature, then the self-nature is not actual, it's not real. Zen Master Dogen famously said, "The Dharma is abundantly inherent in each individual. Yet without practice, it will not be manifested, and without enlightenment, it will not be perceived." And still, and yet, there it is, a lotus flower, whether it's perceived or not. And even after emerging from the water, we can't actually say, to say, "I am enlightened," or "she is enlightened," is ultimately a false statement. It's false because there's no I, there's no static, permanent entity that we can call I, or she, or he. And there's no am, there's no existence from one moment to the next. As soon as we say, "I am something," now it's gone. "He is," now that person's gone. We are just energy in flux. We are pure becoming. It is such an irony to work so hard and finally having some insight into our true nature and to see that we haven't gained anything, nothing. We don't have anything we didn't always have. But again, it's our having lost the illusion that we're an ordinary person. Or unenlightened. This is what is so helpful to one's practice. It's not that there is any. It's not just that there is the benefit of having awakened, but that having seen through this false delusion, this illusion of enlightened and deluded, having seen through the illusion of a separate self, we can never be quite as deceived again by the notion, and that's all it is, the notion of a self. We can't get quite as disgusted with this, what we imagine to be this self. We can't get quite as proud of what we imagine to be this self. In other words, we can't really see oneself as separate, special, better, worse. There's no object left to waste time thinking about. There's another verse from the Mumonkan. Before realization, everything is separate and disconnected. After realization, everything is one great family. And then it continues. Before realization, everything is one great family. And after realization, everything is separate and disconnected. Or we could say distinct. Different. Best thing we can possibly do is to let go of any notions of before and after, of lightened, deluded, awakened, ordinary. This is the obstacle, these notions. When the mind is free of thoughts, then, whether we know it or not, our enlightened nature is manifesting itself. All right, our time is up. We'll stop now and recite the four vows.